February 11, 2015, the 36th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. Every year, the commemoration of the anniversary is marked by all of Iran, and this year, there was no exception. Except this year, more media outlets, TV channels, and publications covered this year's events. So after 36 years, what have been the achievements of this revolution? The challenges ahead, and why has Iran's revolution bore fruits that other revolutions in the regions have not? Just some of the questions we'll be asking in this edition of The Debate.
The Islamic Revolution of Iran, which ended the monarchical rule of the U.S.-backed Pahlavi regime after many years of resistance and protests, is now 36 years old. The Iranian Revolution was the result of an uprising by a Muslim society in a country ruled by a Western-backed monarchy. Iran has been subject to pressure from external sources over the past decades because it has implemented the ideals of the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini. Right after gaining its sovereignty as an Islamic country, Iran was forced into an 8-year war with Iraq's former dictator Saddam Hussein in the 1980s. The imposition of U.S.-led sanctions by the West on various sectors of Iran's economy under various pretexts such as human rights record or peaceful nuclear energy program were aimed at hindering Iran's progress. Iranian officials have time and again expressed that they have managed to weather the effects of sanctions by focusing on domestic production and non-oil exports. Analysts stress that the Islamic Republic's achievements are largely because of the Iranian people's support for the government.
The Islamic Revolution in Iran is still extremely popular with the Iranian masses because it is their revolution. And it reflects and represents their aspirations for a life of freedom and dignity.
In recent years, Iran has made great achievements in the defense sector and has gained self-sufficiency in manufacturing essential military hardware and defense systems. The latest achievement was the successful launch of its fourth homegrown satellite into space by its indigenous Safir-e-Fajj satellite carrier. The Islamic Revolution of Iran has been a big source of inspiration for other revolutions and uprisings in the Middle East, but some analysts have drawn a distinction.
The revolution was a popular revolution. It was one of the few revolutions in the last two or three centuries that was truly people's wish. People came to the streets in 1978, 1979, and demanded a representative government and overthrew the Shah's government. And they owned the revolution.
Iran is known to have a long history, and the road to freedom has been a long one. Nevertheless, today it is a free nation and continues to make progress in different fields. As the country celebrates the 36th anniversary of its Islamic Revolution, it continues to inspire regional and extra-regional countries to act in the international arena as independent players.
Our guest for this edition of The Debate from the Crescent and Cross Solidarity Movement, Mark Len, joins us in the studios here. And we have senior advisor at the Center for Defense Information, Lawrence Korb, who joins us from Washington. Gentlemen, welcome. Let me start with you, Mark Len. We understand that you were actually out on the streets today. So I'd like to ask you on this very special day, what did you experience? What did you see?
What I saw was pure raw power, something that I have not personally seen, unfortunately, in my own country, attending various celebrations of our quote-unquote independence. It was somewhat surprising, shocking, I might even say, to see people ranging in age from 70 to 7. And they're out there in the streets, and the energy that was there, I couldn't help but think to myself that if the people of the United States had just a small fraction of the same energy and patriotism and love for true freedom that I saw today on the streets in Tehran, that we wouldn't have the type of corrupt government that we have now that basically is just a rubber stamp for foreign interests.
Okay, Lawrence Korb, do you have a reaction to Mark Len?
Well, first of all, I mean, the United States government, we elected an African American back in 2008, and he's not under the spell of foreign interests. In fact, he's criticized by a lot of people here in the United States for not being more involved in the world, for negotiating, for example, with Iran. So I think, I think you can talk about the Iranian situation, but don't compare it to the United States. I mean, we basically elect people of all different backgrounds to office, and when they don't perform as we'd like, we have another election to get rid of them. In 2009, the election in Iran was anything but free. In fact, you had the Green Revolution at the time. So I think we want to talk about the Iranian Revolution, great. You want to talk about the people of Iran, great. But don't say that the United States is the problem, that we're not. We're not perfect, but I would say compared to any other country in the world, men and women from all different backgrounds are able to get ahead if they work hard and take advantage of the opportunities. My family came from other countries. All of my friends came from all parts of the world and were able to become integrated into this country.
Okay, well, we can start making some comparisons here. We can talk about the Mark Lend elections that involved Al Gore. We can talk about Iran's most recent election, which had over 70% turnout. So which was a better example of democracy, Mark Lend?
Well, clearly Iran's was. We haven't gotten 70% in who knows how long. And the fact of the matter is that if we follow the trends that have existed now for far too long in the United States, even if we did manage to get 70% out, we wouldn't necessarily elect somebody who was going to be doing the bidding of the United States. We basically have one bird and two different wings, a left wing and a right wing. But at the end of the day, no matter which wing happens to be doing the heavy lifting as far as the flapping goes, the bird does not sail in the direction of what is in the best interests of the American people. And this is the problem. Like I said earlier, if the people of America were as politically aware and as politically enthusiastic as what I saw in the streets of Tehran today, they would start thinking for themselves instead of allowing corporate America that is in control of our news media and basically does our thinking for us. They would be making decisions that are not just only in their own best interest, but in the best interest of future generations who are going to be inheriting the whole mess.
Okay, so let's come out of this we came out swinging with the debate between Iran and the U.S., but at the same time, Lawrence Korb, you have said that, well, talks are going on. And it seems like every time Iran is mentioned these days, everything seems to focus on these talks. Is this a pivotal point when it comes to the relationship that exists between Iran and the U.S., even though the subject of this program isn't just that? But it seems like bridging the East with the West could be happening at this juncture. Even though Iran has succeeded in the past decades while not being involved with the U.S. formally in any shape or form.
Well, the United States and Iran have worked together on a number of issues. After the attacks of 9/11, Iran was the first and I think the only Muslim country that spoke out against them. They had a candlelight vigil in Tehran. And at the Bonn Conference in December of 2001, the Iranians and the Americans worked together to put Karzai into power. In the first Gulf War, Iran allowed the American, when the Iraqis sent their planes into Iran, the Iranians kept them there. They wouldn't let them get involved in the fight. And they also said that if any American pilots went down there, they would take care of them. We're also working together in Iraq right now. Nobody wants to say it, openly, but the fact of the matter is we have a common enemy there in ISIS. So there are areas that we work together. The nuclear issue obviously is an important issue, not just to the United States, but to the world. Remember that the talks are not led by the United States. They're led by Ms. Ashton, who's from the EU. It's the P5 plus one, and there are sanctions that were put on by the United Nations Security Council because there was concern whether Iran was living up to its obligations. It signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty to make sure that they lived up to those obligations, which they freely undertook.
And, you know, we seem to be still in this relationship between the U.S. and Iran, even though I'd like to move beyond that, but it's hard to. Mark Glenn, so throughout the decades, we know how Iran has felt about the U.S. and vice versa. Trust is not there. But then again, we have seen a new administration. We've seen a new page maybe to be turning. And again, it goes back to these nuclear talks. Would you say that this is that defining moment where the West can prove, in particular the U.S., whether they're going to be true in terms of their word, or are we looking at just two countries that will not be able to resolve this and perhaps then move parallel in whatever directions?
Well, I think that they could move past this and they could work parallel to each other, except for the fact that the United States is absolutely intent upon reversing what took place in 1979, which was a successful revolution against the United States that has not been repeated in the area since then. As far as them moving forward, no. I think that what we see taking place right now is basically a new strategy. I don't think that it is a new page. A new strategy, instead of being overtly aggressive towards Iran, they're going to coax Iran into these talks in the same way that the in the ancient epic poem, the Aeneid, the Trojans were coaxed into opening the gates of their walled city to the Greeks. In the form of a wooden horse, and it was just a ruse. It was a ruse to get the horse in the within the gates of the city, so that at night the Greek soldiers could crawl out of the belly of the horse, open the gates, and allow the Greek army to invade. I think that this is essentially what the entire charade of these talks is about. It's about putting Iran in the position where she's going to make concessions. She will open up her banking system to Western banking interests. She will certainly allow the corrupting influence of Hollywood into her society so that her society can be steered remote control the way that the societies in the West are. And also to essentially remove what I believe to be the religious element that is one of the fruits of the revolution of Iran, and to go to a purely secular government that will then be, again, steerable via remote control in the same manner that our elections are steerable by media and manufactured public opinion.
Lawrence Corp.